Well, what about next Tuesday then? We can all go over to the mall for a quick bite and then sit for a family photo.
No, that's not going to work. There's a board finance meeting that afternoon. Could run late. I probably won't be home for dinner.
And Tuesday morning?
No, I'll be prepping for the meeting. Church budgets are complicated. Sorry.
And Wednesday's out
because of the youth conference. Which goes on through the end of the week, and then we're back to Sunday again. Uh-oh. I know that sound. What is it?
You do remember that you have a family to take care of, right, Pastor?
Well, it tells me that that couple is having a little trouble balancing family time with everything else that's going on at the church. We are exploring this topic on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. I'm Chris Fabry. Our host, as always, is Reverend H.B. London, Jr.
You know, Chris, you know, my kids are grown now, and then they've got my grandkids are in college, at least three of the four are. And as I look back over those years of raising them up and getting them going and out on their own, you know, I'll admit that I didn't always do as good a job as I should of making my family a priority. I think Beverly really was the key to the success that our family enjoys right now. But man, you've got nine kids and you work as a writer and you're a radio talk show host. And I mean, I don't know how you get people from one point to the next, and you're married, and you've got a wife, and you've got all these stuff going, and you live in the desert, and all this. How do you make it work?
I have three clones of myself. It's a wonderful thing. No, I appreciate the question, HB, because I think we've talked about this with when Andrea was with us. Some great advice that Jerry Jenkins gave me years ago. He had three sons, and he said he would not do a writing project when he got home at night until the kids were tucked in bed. And he said, sometimes we tucked them in right after the dinner, but he said, you know, we'd have that family time. It's got to be intentional. And one of the things with some of the health struggles that we've dealt with in our family, and one of my sons has type 1 diabetes, so we were told early on, when this happens in a family, usually what happens is one person becomes the go-to person. You know, it's always this person that you're calling saying, how much do I give?
Yeah.
And we've tried really hard with that as the example to have me come along and say, look, you take a day off now. You go and you just, you know, do whatever you need to do. And I'm going to be here and I'll take charge. And when you come back, the kitchen's going to be clean and this kind of thing. And some of that weight that's on her shoulders a lot with all the things that she does around the house is taken off, at least for a period of time. And she knows, oh, I'm going to have this day or that day or this evening. And when you work together like that, then it makes some of the rest of the time and the, you know, getting the family stuff done a little bit easier because you know you're going to get a break at some point.
You know, the thing that I sense, and I still don't know how you, I mean, you made a good explanation, but I still don't know how you do it. But the thing that I sense in ministry is that you really need to be intentional.
Yeah.
If you don't set out to make it work, then it probably will not work. And I'm excited about our next panel of guests. You know, we were at a pastor's conference that Focus on the Family sponsored. We were in the beautiful desert community of La Quinta, California. It's out near Palm Springs. And we were at this beautiful resort and palm trees and flowers and gentle breezes and wonderful fellowship. And I had a chance to get with these three couples who really work in the trenches. They've all got kids. They've all got a story. But it was just interesting to see how they made things work. It didn't always work out the first time, but usually they were able to get it together. And Chris, you're going to introduce them.
Well, the panel included Pastor Michael Henderson and his wife Angela. They serve at Shiloh Church of God in Christ in Oceanside, California. Pastor Bob Huseman and his wife Lisa. He's senior pastor at Emmanuel Christian Reformed Church in Hudsonville, Michigan. And our third couple, Reverend Wade Brown and his wife Deb. Reverend Brown is a former pastor who now serves on the pastoral ministries team here at Focus on the Family.
This is a little different segment on our Pastor to Pastor series because I'm sitting in a big old room out here in Palm Springs, California, La Quinta to be exact, where we're involved in a clergy couples conference We do these from time to time around the country, and Focus on the Family joins with the pastors and their spouses to laugh a lot and enjoy one another's company and to eat good food and just to be inspired as best we can through messages and through song and through the interaction that we have with one another. And I'm joined at the table by Wade and Deb Brown, who are members of our staff, our pastoral staff at Focus on the Family, by Mike and Angela Henderson from Oceanside, California, and from Bob and Lisa Heisman from Hudsonville, Michigan. And so we're kind of going from one end of the country to the other, and we're going to be talking about juggling and balancing family and ministry, which seems to be one of the toughest challenges that any of us will ever have. And as I look back in my life, that sure was tough for me and Beverly. So you may hear some noise from outside or whatever. If you do, just ignore it, because we're in here and we're just talking together. Bob and Lisa, would you just briefly tell us where you serve and what you're doing there and how long you've been in Hudsonville, Michigan?
We have been in Hudsonville, Michigan almost 14 years. We're serving a church that's about 60 years old, and I'm the only ordained staff at the church, and we have a family of four boys and three girls at home, and so we find a good challenge in trying to keep balance in ministry.
Okay, so you got seven kids at home.
Seven kids at home.
All right, okay, thanks. We'll talk about that more. And Mike and Angela, you live in the beautiful Oceanside, California.
Yes, yes. We're serving at a small congregation, Shiloh Church of God in Christ, and we've been there for about 11 years now.
Yeah. Your leader, Charles Blake, and I are good friends, and we've been together a lot of different times. How many children do you have?
We have three boys, three sons.
Yeah, and they're all over the place in ages, or are they stair-stepped?
Well, they're stair-steps. They are 17, 18, and 19.
Oh, man, so you have a very active household, I'm
Definitely.
Sure. Yeah. And Wade and Deb Brown have been with us on staff here at Focus on the Family for about 10 months, and I know for a fact they've got an 18-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son, but they've had a variety of pastorates and ministry assignments through the years. Wade, as you look back on all those, what was the one that probably tested you the most, if I might say that?
Yes, really a church that I grew up in spiritually in Colorado Springs, and a church that where the senior pastor really in so many ways, age, helped me to understand God's call on my life for vocational ministry. And that was about, served in that church from 85 to 95 as just a lay leader, Deb and I, and they sent us out to seminary, supported us in church planning, brought me back to be their associate pastor. And I actually was there as a pastor, as the associate pastor from 99 to 2001 in Colorado Springs.
And that's really how you came to know Focus on the Family, wasn't it?
I sure did.
Or at least the ministry to pastors.
Sure did, absolutely. Observed really you from a distance and admired your ministry and the ministry of the team. And remember 8 years ago when you folks put that family, pastor and family retreat on the campus there at Focus. And just ministered us deeply.
Yeah, I run into so many people around the country, you'd think we had thousands there, but it really was 250 couples is what it was.
Yeah.
Now, the women haven't said much, so Angela, I just want to start with you. Oceanside, California, three teenage boys. I know that as African-Americans, so often the husband and the wife serve together, sometimes as co-pastors. It's really a partnership. If you had to identify the area of ministry that takes up more of your time as a mom and a wife and a churchwoman more than any other thing, what would you say that would be?
Well, I serve in a lot of different areas. I do administration, I do praise and worship. So I think the area that takes up most of my time probably would be the area of praise and worship, just preparing, doing a lot of preparing for that, and just trying to balance family with all the demands of being a praise and worship leader. I think that would be the greatest thing.
Now, your kids are just about grown.
Yes.
But does that still take you out of the house a lot at night? I mean, to do rehearsals and that kind of thing?
It does. It does. And then I have a son that isn't driving yet. He's 18, but he isn't driving yet. So that takes me out a lot to have to drive him around and then juggle things within the ministry. Yeah. So, yes, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Deb, you serve on the staff of a large church in Colorado Springs in a mission area. But with both of you, you know, you and Wade both being in ministry, how do you balance all of that? How do you keep everything straight?
H, I've really tried to make my weekends available to be there for the kids when Wade's had to be out. On staff at Focus now, he travels more, and so I need to be more available and less available for work, knowing that my priority is my kids, not my work. Even though it's a calling in life, my children are a higher priority than what I do. So that's my balance. But at the same time, there's times when I need to be on and be working, and Wade has to play a support role for the kids. Yeah. For me, since I need to be at a missions conference, or I travel out of town on mission trips for a week at a time, and he has to be on when I'm off.
And I know your kids are active in sports and that kind of thing, so that adds to the schedule, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yeah. You do feel like a taxi.
Yeah. Now, Lisa, I can't imagine having six kids in a house all at the same time, and I know that that takes a lot of balancing to do ministry and to be a helpmate to Bob and to take care of all the kids. How do you do all that?
I think when we were younger in ministry, and we just had, like say when we came to this church, we just had two little girls at the time. I tried to do more. I tried to be that woman that could be on this committee and that committee and part of this ministry and just do as much as I could. And as our family grew, and particularly with the birth of our fifth child who was born disabled, I realized that I needed to, for a season of my life, sacrifice some of those commitments for the health of my family and for the health of our marriage. So I consciously allowed myself to pull out of things that I felt like I needed to be part of or even wanted to be part of and said, for this point, for this health of our kids and ourselves, I needed to pull back a little bit and only do the very least right now and allow people to let me do that. So I think I've been in a season. Our fifth child is now 8, and we've added 2 more since then. So I still find myself in that season. But as the older kids get older, I find myself integrating myself back into ministries here and there, even if it's in small amounts, to contribute where I can, but allow myself the freedom to say this isn't the season for me, yeah. And that time will come again.
Now, I know that pastors' wives always deal with the unrealistic expectations that people drop on. Have people in your church been pretty understanding about the fact that you can only do so much? And
I think they have, and I think part of my goal is to allow them to see myself, but Bob too, as just real people. And I think when we were young in ministry, I felt like there was that need to show people, oh, I could do it all. I could be the strong person and had it all together. And I realize when they see me as real and fallible and I don't have it all together, then they see me as maybe somebody that they can relate to. Yeah. Instead of putting on that facade that, you know, I have it all together. And sometimes just making it to church on Sunday morning with everybody dressed and their hair combed is a feat in itself.
Wade, you know, your different assignments, and as your kids have grown up, you know, you've got, you know, 5 years between the two kids and that kind of thing. And
yes.
So, you know, Kelsey, she wasn't raised as a pastor's kid or in those early years, was she?
You know, I was in seminary during those early years, and Benjamin was born our first semester of seminary, and so that presented a unique challenge in and of itself, and I think my first class at seminary was church history, started early, and just wondered what God was doing in all that timing with all that. Didn't do very well in the class, but I'm not sure I did well as a parent or even a husband during that time. It was just a very stressful time, I remember that being, and you know, I was one of those late bloomers in ministry, if you will. So I was 35 when I started seminary, but I felt much younger than that, spiritually speaking, I think, as well.
Mike, you know, you got those 3 teenage guys, and with them growing up, I can just imagine, as close as they are, that I don't know about Little League or football or whatever or sports, but I'm sure that there were times where you just had to – back away from the church a little bit so that you could be the father that you needed to be. How did you manage that?
Well, our boys were, in their younger years, very involved in athletics. Yeah. All three of them played Pop Warner football. And surprisingly enough, I was able to make it to many of their practices. I even had one opportunity to serve as the team chaplain.
Oh, really?
So that was real great. But it gave me an opportunity to really get involved with what they were doing, and also to connect even with what was going on in the lives of the other kids and even the families, their parents as well. Yeah. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, I never had the luxury of my dad involving himself in anything I did, and so when I hear you all talk about that, I get that. That I almost missed that with my kids. I was so busy that, you usually model what you've been taught. Mm. And as a result of that, when my kids were very little, I wasn't as good as I should have been. But I think we've made it up since then. The question that I have, and I want to go couple by couple if we can. So I want to start with Mike and Angela here. Is there a difference in raising pastors' kids that you can see from just the secular world and the neighbors you have next door or whatever? Do you see a really distinct difference in raising a pastor's kid as opposed to just an ordinary child?
I think the main difference for us has been that we not only just wanted to have good children, but we really wanted to have kids that had a heart for God. Yeah. And our boys were, homeschooled. We took the path of Angela here staying home with them, and she poured herself into those boys, teaching them scripture and teaching them the ways of God. And I think for us that has really made a world of difference. We're seeing it now as they're getting older. The fruit of that is coming out, and we're just so thankful to God that He enabled us to be able to invest spiritually so in their lives. But I would say that probably is about the main difference.
Angela, when you think back to that time, were there many other children in the neighborhood who were homeschooled?
Actually, that was a very lonely time period for me because there were not. I was an African-American mom, and the neighborhood was predominantly Caucasian and a few African-Americans, but they were working moms. So I can remember that being a very lonely time, but I just really felt that God had called me to stay at home and to really pour into their lives. And I'm just so grateful that I had older a seasoned couple who would encourage me to take the route that I felt that the Lord was leading me, because it was such a struggle. It was like I was torn because although I felt God calling me to stay home, I realized that the culture was so different I felt like I was opposing the culture, especially being African American and not having that support system. So,
What? Bob and Lisa from Hudsonville, Michigan, living right next door to the church, seven kids. Are the expectations that you have for your children or people have for your children any different? I mean, just right next door to the church, I mean, they can hear them screaming or whatever.
Or me screaming.
Have you had to adjust the way you raise those kids simply because you do live next door to the church?
There are probably some moments in their lives where we tell them that we have different expectations for them because they are the pastor's kids, but those would be the exception to the rule. I think most of the time we raise them the way that we would even if they weren't pastor's kids. We still try to instill good values into them. Yeah. I think that's often seen as a negative aspect in their lives, but being the pastor's kids also gives them some opportunities that other kids don't have. Yeah. They all seem, very comfortable participating in things where they're not intimidated by things of the church because it's familiar to them, part of their life.
I was going to ask you, Lisa, if did your kids, were they in the Christmas play and the Easter play and all that kind of thing?
You know, I think they sometimes purposely avoid putting our kids in places of honor like that, just so that there isn't that feeling like they're getting special privileges, and we're actually really good with
that's
that.
That's okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would have to say I was raised the daughter of a minister who was a military chaplain, and really raised my whole life being mocked and ridiculed for being a pastor's child or a minister's child, and proud of him, but not loving the mockery and the situation. Teasing in a very secular environment. And I worried about that for my kids. And I have to say, I really think they don't have that stigma, not at church, really, and not at school. And for that, we consider it a blessing. Mm-hmm. I think, for the most part, people consider them normal kids.
Just average kids. Mm-hmm. You know, Wade and Deb, I know that the last assignment you had before you came to Focus on the Family was in a mega church, and so it probably was easy for your kids to get lost in
Absolutely.
All that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. But, you know, I would agree with what Bob just said. You know, I think it's the external pressure that other people tend to put on your kids as PKs. And, you know, I would like to think that we would have raised our kids the same way as well. And I know Deb, you know, in the many weekends and night meetings that I've had over the years, especially in the life of the local church, Deb has done an amazing job with Kelsey and Benjamin. And, you know, just keeping them in God's word. And so, I mean, you really have. I mean, she's done a phenomenal job at that. And we, too, are seeing the fruit of that now in their lives. So it's good
to
see.
So in a big church like that, did you insist that your kids were part of everything? Or just because you were on staff?
Absolutely.
Did that add pressure to their
Absolutely
lives?
Absolutely not. Yeah. You know, and I want Deb to speak into some of that, too. They found their niche in the life of the church. They really did. And what worked for them. And, you know, we've tried to be careful over the years, HB, with not wanting our children to dislike the church or have ill feelings towards the church. Yeah. And, you know, for them to go out into life having those kind of thoughts, bitterness towards the church, I think would just break our hearts. And they're not there, and we're just grateful because of that. But Deb probably has some insight into that as well.
I think our desire has been to not raise them as PKs necessarily, to raise them as normal kids. And even though they may carry a title, like we carry titles in life, we hope that others don't see them as that title, but they see them as Kelsey and see them as Benjamin. And somewhere down the road, they may find out that dad is a pastor or mom's on staff at a church. But their friends don't know that first, and even in a mega church especially, others don't know that. Yeah. Even being on staff at a church, others don't even know that I'm on staff when I meet them at the church necessarily, and it may be later. Yeah. When Wade was one of the pastors at the church, he would teach a lot, and we wouldn't necessarily be together always at church. It would be me with the kids or me by myself. And there would be times when I would be talking with someone, and I never introduced myself as Wade's wife. Right. It was Deb, and I'm on staff in missions or whatever. And then later, actually, it was one time I was on a mission trip. I had trained a team for 8 weeks. Actually, I think it was 4 months. And then we went on this mission trip together, and on the bus in Peru, we're driving down, and they say, "You're Wade Brown's wife?" And I'm going, "Yes, that's... I never made that connection," and that's an okay thing for me. Yeah. I don't want to necessarily be connected and be called Wade Brown's wife. I don't need the status. My kids don't need that status.
But in a mega church, you can get away with that.
Yes.
Right. As the other two couples, as I listen to you, it wouldn't be quite that easy for you, would it?
No.
I mean, everybody knows who you are, and they know where you live. And they know
that's
what
exactly
your kids are doing and all that kind of thing. The one question that I think a lot of our pastors listening would be interested in, you know, we live in a fishbowl. And so, you know, we're all floating around and people are looking in and seeing all this stuff is going. How do you pull the shades on that fishbowl and kind of disappear so that people don't know everything that's going on or what you're doing? How do you all handle that, Mike?
Well, every so often, we're finding that it's very important for us to just get away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sort of like what we did this week.
Yeah.
And I kind of over the years have developed a habit of when we are getting away, I only tell those who, you know, it's absolutely necessary for them to know.
Yeah.
And we just kind of slip off into the background. Nobody's even aware. Mm. We might get a few phone calls, but we'll, you know, let the voicemail pick it up and forward it to whoever can handle that or should handle that while we're away. But we're just finding the importance of being able to take that time for ourselves, change the environment, change the scenery, and that goes a long way in terms of helping us to come back and be refreshed and ready to deal with all the things we have to deal with.
Bob, with seven kids, the fishbowl escape becomes a little more difficult, I would think. And because you might forget a kid or something.
Right. Been known to happen.
And have to go back home. How do you all get away? I mean, how do you pull the shades and shut the door and say, you know, no entrance or whatever? I mean, how do you do that?
What comes to mind is two things. One, getting out of town to places where we know we're not going to run into, you know, our friends at church. So going on vacations or on trips to places where we know we'll be anonymous, we find that's a good thing. And also having some friendships, other families that aren't part of our congregation, where our kids can be there and they can just be their friends and not be the pastor's kids, and we're not the pastor to our friends. That's just a job for me, like they have a job. Mm-hmm. So there's not those church connections. That's been good for us to have those kind of friendships.
Yeah. You know, Wade and Deb, I know that I know you better than the other couples, but you guys are runners and you like outside exercise and a lot of that kind of thing. I'm sure that that's an escape for you, isn't it? Just to be able to get out and go run or do whatever. Deb, right?
It definitely is. I miss it right now. I'm with an injury, and I miss getting out and running as much. But it definitely gives you can, in a sense, almost solve some of the world's problems, ministry problems or whatever, as you're out running. I have found that listening to my iPod, Christian music, has really, it encourages me and inspires me as I'm running. Some people like heavier music, but even praise and worship helps me a lot.
Yeah. And I've heard other people say the same, that if you can just isolate and just kind of block out the rest of the world, that you can solve a lot of those problems.
Yeah, and H, I think one of the things that's helped with us is our kids have kept us incredibly active. And I mean, whether it's, you know, a sporting event in town locally or in a different state, and that's taken place many times over the years, we really try to make that our family getaway time. And so it saves us some money in the process. We are with the kids, and we love watching them do their thing anyway, whether it's the running thing or the biking or swimming or whatever. Yeah. But that's been a lot of our family vacation time over the years, and a great getaway for us as a family.
Yeah, we're talking to literally thousands of pastors right now, and a lot of pastors' wives listen before their husbands listen, and. If you could say to them, and I'm going to start with Bob and Lisa, but if you could look out into this thousands of people and say, if you really want to find a healthy balance between ministry and family, then you've got to make sure of blank, blank, blank. Hmm. If you really want to find a balance between family and ministry, then you've got to make sure of blank, blank, blank. What would you say?
My first thought is you've got to make sure that whenever it's possible, you're in charge of your schedule. For us, it's been a lifesaver to plan our schedule and plan far ahead whenever possible, the nights that I'm away and the nights that I'm home, so that the family system can plan on that, and then whenever possible, I don't stray from that.
Yeah.
So if they know Dad's going to be home on Monday and Tuesday, you can plan that, and unless it's an emergency, that doesn't change. And I think having that as a constant, this is when Dad's gone, this is when Dad's home, that has helped us a lot.
Yeah.
And I try to prioritize that as much as possible.
Well, that's just the schedule. People knowing in advance what you're going to do and what
would be required, and mm-hmm. when you can eat dinner together and when you can't, and all those kind of things. You all live in a military town, don't you, Oceanside?
Yes.
So you probably have people dropping by at all hours of the night and day, or people needing something from time to time.
Definitely.
Yeah, so if you were saying to folks around, you know, this is how we've tried to balance family and ministry, what would you all say?
I think for us, the whole idea and concept of prioritizing your life is important. God first, family second, the church comes third.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've tried to live by that. We feel that it's very important to stay focused in those areas and to keep first things first, the main thing, the main thing.
Yeah.
If you can stick to that, it'll make a world of difference.
And you do it without making excuses, right?
Without making excuses.
Yeah.
Sometimes you fall off the bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another thing I might add is the importance of having accountability relationships.
Yeah.
Folks in your life that ask you, hey, how you doing in this area?
Angela, do you have to say to Mike ever, you're running too fast, you're running too hard, we're missing you at home?
Yeah, I do. I have to tell him to slow down a bit at times. And I thank God for him, because he does. He'll make that adjustment, and if he needs to change his schedule or do things a little bit differently just to accommodate the family, he's usually pretty good about doing that.
Yeah, Lisa, with seven kids, do you ever just wake up some morning and say, I don't know if I can do this today?
More often than I'd like to admit, sometimes. Some days you feel invincible, and other days you think, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. You know?
And what do you do on those days when you're saying, what am I doing? I mean,
I think I just, the family makes you keep going.
Yeah, you just
and
have
you
to,
say, you know, this is what I'm doing.
You just have
and
to do it.
We'll get through this.
Yeah.
And I think in response to your question about balance, I think I would reiterate what I said earlier, in that it's okay to say we have seasons of life where you can give more than other seasons, and to give yourself the freedom, like we've had to do in our life, to say this is maybe not the time when I can contribute, even in areas I feel called to or want to, but right now the kids need me there. And this is where my calling is, my first calling.
Yeah.
And that time will come again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will. And God will reward you for what you're doing now. Just last with Deb, you know, these other ladies are stay-at-home moms and homeschooling and doing different things. And you've chosen, a career path in ministry. And so when you guys get home at night, do you just always talk ministry? Is Wade always saying this happened today, or are you always saying I had this meeting, or that lousy senior pastor, all that kind of stuff? How do you separate all that?
Well, when we get home at night, I have two hungry kids and a hungry husband, so the first thing I do is get dinner going. There's no talking at first. And then after dinner, if we have time or don't have an event going on, then Wade and I will sometimes sit down in the kitchen as things are getting cleaned up, and we'll have some time to talk. But no, we found that we can't constantly talk ministry. Our kids aren't interested in ministry all the time. I mean, they don't live it. They're actually interested in our attention. They want to tell us about their days. It's really neat to see our daughter at the table. We do it high-lows is what we call it. And she will usually start it. She'll say, okay, high-lows for the day. So each of us have to go around the table. What was your high and what was your low? And I know for us sometimes we don't even think about doing the high-lows, but she's really held us accountable to doing it. And it's been a blessing for us to share that, because we have to actually stop and think about what was our high and what was our low. And most of us don't usually do that on a daily basis, to really stop and look back on the day and reflect on that.
But that's good wisdom, because you can celebrate with each other's highs and maybe you can help where there's lows.
That's exactly right.
Well, you came out of a church ministry into a parachurch ministry, and I did the same thing, and there's a whole different kind of pressure now that is easier for me than it was as a pastor.
Interesting.
I never was able to just forget who I was and what I was.
Right.
And now in a parachurch world, you know, I don't have every Sunday, and I don't have to go to church on Wednesday night. And,
that's right.
Yeah. And that I don't even have to act like I want to. You know,
that's
and,
right.
And so, but I know just from our talking, that's been different for you too.
Oh my
right?
goodness, you know, it really has, H, and it's been fun to process that with you. It's been refreshing. This is a different season for us, and. You know, we hope it goes on forever. It just, you know, it, but God knows. He's the one who orchestrates and knows the plans he has for us. But, you know, it has been different not to face that relentless return of Sunday or the Sabbath, so to speak. And even though I wasn't doing the teaching every weekend, there were responsibilities and just being there at times for four services, not just one service. And but, you know, week after week after week, and you so look forward to your weekend off, and it didn't seem to come soon enough. But and then, of course, the meetings associated with that. And in many respects, I feel at first there was a sense of guilt, honestly, and I got over that quickly. And again, just processing with H on that. And you did it for over 30 years, so I can't imagine you know, that kind of segue that you made. But
the greatest freedom I was not having Sunday nights.
Oh, I bet.
Having to come back with a Sunday night sermon.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
My first Sunday, I just did cartwheels and yippies all over the place. But hey, thanks. Our guest on this section or this edition of Pass It to Pastor has been Wade and Deb Brown from Colorado Springs and Focus on the Family. Mike and Angela Henderson from Oceanside, California, and Bob and Lisa Heisman from Hudsonville, Michigan. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Our thanks to this special panel of pastoral couples for joining us on Pastor to Pastor with Reverend H.B. London, Jr. I'm Chris Fabry. H.B., I know as we conclude this edition on balancing family and ministry, you have some final thoughts you'd like to share.
Well, thanks, Chris. You know, we've been doing this so many years now, 15 or 16 years, that I think that we've just about told every story that we have. And but as I think back in those early days, I've often said on Pastor to Pastor editions that I remember one time an older pastor, bless his heart, I know it was a generational thing, but in a sense he kind of patted me on the head and he said, Brother London, you just go out and build the church and God will take care of your family. And the upshot of that was that, you know, not having a dad who was a very good father and not having a dad who was a good manager of family and not having a dad who expressed love and affection to me very much, I just thought that would be my mandate to go build the church and God would take care of my family. Well, the upshot would be of that, you know, he didn't necessarily take care of my family. I think he showed grace and mercy. But here I was, a young pastor, 23, 24. The church was growing and people were saying what a wonderful pastor I was and, you know, that the sky was the limit for my career and all those kind of things. But in a sense, you know, I was being successful in ministry, but a phony at home. Until one day, Beverly just said to me, and she left this in a note, she said, it's obvious that you have misplaced your priorities. And we're not going to have any ministry at all until you come to a place where you put us in the proper priority. And, you know, we argue about priority all the time. Is it God, family, church, church, God, family, whatever that sequence is. But the truth is, it's not all of them all the time in the same place. That there are going to be a lot of times when God is number one without a question, and the family is second and the church is third. But there are going to be other times when in the managing and balancing process, you know, you've got to make God number one, but sometimes the work of the church almost crowds him out of that position. And so you find yourself doing the work of the church, but alienating the one who called you to do the work of the church. And that's a serious thing. But the family many times has got to understand that sometimes in ministry, ministry will come before family. I know we hate to say that, and that would be an offense to say to our spouse or to our children, but honest. People die at inconvenient times. You have three or four presentations to make, and you haven't had time to get all those messages together. The board is meeting on a building situation, and it just so happens that the only time you can get them together is the first half of the basketball game that your child is playing in. Or some weeks you find yourself out of the house four or five nights, and you hate doing it, but you don't have any choice. And see, this is where you sit down and you look at one another and you help each other understand how you're feeling and why you're feeling that way. Because so often, Chris, honest, pastor spouses, many times they feel like they're second-class church members, that you give more attention to people that you hardly know than you do to the people who live under your roof. And the truth of it is, sometimes we do that. And we hate it, but we do. But then there are those other times when you can take an afternoon off, or when you can schedule yourself in such a way that you can spend really quality time with your family, where most men or women who had a regular job couldn't do that. And you make the most of those situations. And so I'll say it over and over again, that if you're looking for balance in your ministry, you'll probably never find it. But if in an intentional way you and your spouse agree on how you're going to manage your family, your relationship, your schedule, and your ministry, you'll come to a pretty happy medium somewhere along the way. It won't always be great, but it'll be livable. And then there will be those wonderful times when you can just say, wow, isn't God good to give us this wonderful, wonderful time together? Aren't we fortunate to be doing what we're doing? And I just think we've got to go into this thing of managing our family and balancing our schedules with a sense of optimism, knowing that we're not going to get it right all the time. But if we try, we're going to get it right most of the time.
Thanks for sharing that with us, HB. And it really points out how important this team is of a pastor and the family. If you want to learn more about pastoral ministries here at Focus on the Family, we recommend you visit our website. It's parsonage.org. You'll find many resources designed specifically for your family and ministry at the site, including our online forums, which allow you to interact with other pastors who know exactly what you are going through. You can also find other pastor-to-pastor topics that we've addressed, like mentoring men, healthy boundaries, and nagging doubts. And if you or a family member would like to talk with one of our pastoral counselors, we have a toll-free, confidential pastoral care line available. Simply call 1-877-233-4455. Reverend H.B. Lunnon and I look forward to sharing with you again on another edition of Pastor to Pastor. But in the meantime, may God richly bless you, your family, and your ministry.